This is In the Circle on D1 Thought.
And we welcome you to the only podcast that will not throw out Aaron Boone because he did not cuss out an umpire who has rabbit ears and thin skin. Of course, you're talking about In a Circle on D1 Softball. My name is Victor Anderson. Glad that you're with us here today. Eric Lopez, you will be hearing from shortly and later on in this particular episode. Coming up, our now annual tradition for the fourth straight year, we at In the Circle are proud to have a conversation with the Division One Softball Committee Chairperson. And this year, it is Mr. Kurt McGuffin from UT Martin, who, as Eric Lute will hear in the open, is in the hot seat, if you will, as heading the committee, who will be tasked to select the field of 64 for this year's NCAA tournament. You'll hear Mr. McGuffin and how the committee are working with a ever-changing landscape with the sport and how they're going to use those metrics to determine the 64 teams who will compete for a national championship when mayhem comes around. That's coming up on this episode of In a Circle. Also, some thoughts on some stunning midweek results in Lafayette and in Gainesville. And trust me, when I saw that score in Gainesville, I had to do a double take when I got home Wednesday night after my broadcasting assignments in the land. I didn't believe the score. Eric Lopez didn't believe the score, and he was broadcasting a resumed double header. All that and more coming up on this episode of In a Circle on D1 Softball. You know where you can find our podcast. Another month crushing in on good pods. We again thank you for your support. This transition to D1 Softball has been nothing short of home runs, and more home runs. That's 93 fewer than Carly Spade home runs, now solo second all time in NCAA D1 history in terms of the home run break. Congratulations to previous guest and friend of the podcast, Carly Spade from Miami of Ohio. You could listen and watch that interview on the In the Circle YouTube channel. You can also catch my exclusive conversation with Savannah Collins from Athletes Unlimited about Jocelyn Allo and her move to AUX on June 10th in Wichita, Kansas. As always, subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. Rate us and review us 5 stars. If you rate us 4 stars, we're inclined to believe that you are a hater and you'll probably overdraft a quarterback in the NFL draft that takes place this weekend. Anyway, enough of me yapping. Let's get now to one of the coolest traditions that we've had here in Inner Circle. And Eric will mention this during his introduction. This is the fourth straight college softball season we will have the Division One Softball Committee Chairperson join us as a guest on the show. And without any further ado, here is the chairman himself, Mr. Kurt McGuffin, here and In a Circle on D1 Softball.
Well, this is a blast. This is our fourth annual episode where we get a chance to catch up with the Division One Softball Committee Chairperson this year. It happens to be Kurt McGuffin, who is the Vice Chancellor and Director of Athletics at UT Martin. He was hired there on May 22nd, 2017, and he gets the hot chair this year, as we like to joke this year. Kurt, welcome here to In the Circle on D1 Softball. How you doing?
Well, I'm great, Eric. Thank you. We're excited to start getting this thing put together and excited for the finish of a school year and just ready to get going.
Well, tell us a little bit, first of all, how you ended up getting, for those that may not be aware, how you ended up getting the committee chairperson, because you've been around softball and in this process. So just tell us a little bit of the background and how you've got to this position.
Yeah, I think it's always important. I've been an athletic director now for about 13 years, but I think it's always important to represent your school, your conference at the national level. And I've been fortunate when I was a Division II athletic director to be on some NCAA committees. And that's carried over to being a Division One athletic director. I served 2 years on the women's basketball committee prior to the softball committee. They're a little different committees in nature, but the end goal is to do this the right thing and put on a good tournament and get the right teams where they need to be. You know, my first year on the softball committee was last year, and I think some of that putting me in the chair this year was just some previous experience. Not all of it was in softball. I'm not like on my fourth year on the softball committee, but I'm in my second year on the committee. But I was elected by my peers to do this, and hopefully it goes smoothly as it did the last previous 2 years. But, you know, there's always those times where, you know, you get put on that hot seat, like you just said.
What'd you learn from that experience here last year that you're going to keep in the back of your mind this year, now that you're on the committee chairperson side? Not that there is anything, you know, it could be just, hey, this worked, let's make sure this worked, or maybe there's some tweaks you want to do. What did you learn from your experience that you hope to apply this year?
Well, I mean, Kelly Gallup did such a great job with us in the room, and I guess, you know, being on that women's basketball committee and other committees, you know, it's keeping the focus on the criteria. You know, looking at those criteria, you know, and then when it gets down to those paper thin margins, like I think we're going to have this year, like every year, but this year maybe more than ever, you know, those paper thin margins are what's our point that the 10 people in that room want to make as the tiebreaker, so you could say, you know, whether it's top 10 wins or, you know, bad, you know, you look at everything and you look at that total body of work, but you know, we're going to stay on track, and you know, you have a reduced time in softball. You know, women's basketball was a full 5 or 6 days, a full week in the room. Softball, they reduced time to get, you know, those teams right, and we've got to come in there really prepared, and I think we will be, because I do have a great committee.
So take the audience here now to this process starting, like, right now. Tell us what it's like right now for this committee, what the process is right now, and take us all the way up until Selection Sunday and how the process works.
Yeah, you know, we started, you know, we go out throughout the year, but I think the key to our softball selections is really using what we call the RAC, the Regional Advisory Committees. You know, there's 5 regional advisory committees that are made up of coaches. You know, so our 10 committee members, which 3 committee members are coaches, a little different than previous committees. You know, so our 10 committee members are assigned to those regional advisory committees to be chairs. And we really focus in on what those coaches are telling us about those regions, the South region, the Southeast region, the East region, and where they're ranking their top 10 teams and maybe teams to watch. You know, we do as many games as we can, but I think the key is talking to those coaches, those battles with those in that region. So we've had 2 of those so far. We have them every other week. We'll have one next week, which will be our 3rd. And the previous 2, we go through the top 10. We go through games to watch. We go through people that are moving up or moving down. Maybe there's some key injuries in there that a team had that maybe we don't know about. You know, so we make really good notes, and we go back to the national committee on Thursdays, and we talk about those regions that help us prepare. Like I said, those 3 days in the room, we have to be pretty prepared going in to help us prepare. This next week's region call, the 3rd one of 4, we'll get into a top 30, national top 30 type ranking, and try to get a consensus in our region of who we think is the top 10 in the region and then the top 30 nationally. You know, and those aren't the, you know, taking them into the room. Those are really reference points, but those are the best things to get a good consensus of 12, 15 people in a region where their top 30 might be. And then we get in the room and, you know, very quickly we start talking about, you know, who's an at-large, who are those 32 teams that we're going to use at-large, because that's all we really select. And we start talking about these and refer back to a lot of those regional ranking committees. And I think that's real important. But the goal is, again, to get the 32 at-larges in the tournament and put them as equally and try to get those brackets as good as we can. And it's again, that condensed time makes it a little, you know, I don't have any hair left sometimes because I don't have any hair to begin with. But, you know, you get stressed out a little bit because you want to make sure that you get it right.
No doubt. And I know that the last week before Selection Sunday is one of the more stressful ones where sleep is not really much of an option. But I've heard from the, you know, from all the previous committee chairpersons like Sandy Atkins, et cetera, that you all talk constantly to kind of, even if it's not official, you're all keeping in touch, talking softball because that helps in the process. It's not like, hey, we're just going to pick up on this 2 weeks from now. You're already talking softball, aren't you?
Yeah, we talk softball probably all year because there's, you know, the committee's main focus is to get the bracket right and get the right teams in there. But we also administer the tournament. And, you know, this is a really good working committee. When we get to Oklahoma City, you know, our committee members are assigned a team to liaison with, and we're there working from start to finish. You know, but you know, you're right. We have a group text. We're always telling people, trying to get other committee members a really good game on currently, or maybe some couple of games to watch this weekend that are, you know, where we're thinking they're sitting in those regional rankings, you know, as at watches or, you know, really good games in those regions. And, you know, that eye test, we've got to watch games. And I think that's the big piece of it. You can talk to the regional committees and all that, but as committee members, we need to watch games. And I think this group has done a fantastic job of doing that this year. And they're really prepared coming into the bracket and the selections.
You mentioned you've been on committee, part of a committee in women's basketball. How would you compare and contrast the two different sports, being part of a committee in different sports? Are they much more similar than people think, or are they a lot more different than people would think?
Yeah, I think there's some differences. You know, women's basketball, when you're on that committee, you're assigned conferences to talk to. Instead of doing a regional advisory committee, you're assigned a conference to talk about their teams and gather your thoughts on their teams, and you report out about each conference. For instance, I had three conferences that I was supervisor for, and I would report out to our committee on those teams that we thought were those at-large spots in for each conference. Here's a little different with using coaches, probably a little bit more in that selection process. And again, having three coaches on the national committee, you wouldn't find that on the women's basketball committee. And that's a lot. I mean, having a coach on a committee is a lot for them. But I tell you, it is really useful. You know, the things that they bring to the table, not necessarily about maybe the bracketing and all that, but the things they bring to the table about administering the tournament, administering what teams need when they get to practice sites, what teams, you know, and doing it fairly, you know, because coaches have that they live and breathe it every day. I try to live and breathe it most days with being the chair of the committee, but that's hard because we have other jobs. They're living and breathing their sport every day. I think the other thing, like, you know, women's basketball, you know, you are seeding and bracketing more teams, you know, where, you know, softball, it's the tradition and is 16 teams. And then we try to, you know, do the regional piece of that, you know, without having another conference. You don't have two teams from the same conference going to a regional, and you try to stay within the least amount of flights as possible. So that's a little different. And then, like I said, even the selection process where softball is 3 days, where women's basketball is more than 3 days to get those teams right. So there's quite a few differences in what each sport has, but I've enjoyed it because I think there needs to be. Every sport's different, and how do we administer those sports the best we can?
It sounds to me you like the aspect of having a coach in the committee, that perspective, because that's always been a topic on all the sports and committees. Should we have, you know, should there be coaches in there? Should there not be coaches, administrators? It sounds like from your perspective, you like that element a lot.
Enjoyed it because again they bring that attention to detail to some of the administering of the tournament that maybe we don't think about. You know, sometimes you try to think about everything, you have great notes, and the NCAA does a just great job with their notes and their manuals, but you know, they bring that aspect when we, especially when we maybe bring a new rule, you know, to discuss, you know, whether we want to administer that in the tournament, like we're going to have the visible action clocks, you know, and replay and all that. They bring a different thing to that. However, sometimes it is hard for a coach to be there at selections because they may be in their conference tournaments, because that's when selections are happening, or right up to the end of conference tournaments, and the time that they have to commit to administering a rat call or something like that. But I have enjoyed having those coaches on there for the little details that, you know, sometimes get missed on, you know, when you send teams to a neutral site, you know, or a home site, you know, and what's available to them, and to make sure that the tournament and the is going smoothly and it's fair to everybody.
Let's talk about some of the things you mentioned, obviously, earlier about what things maybe you emphasize more. Like, I know last year, Kelly Gatwood, in the post after the selections were made, in doing media interviews, mentioned top 10 wins was something you all emphasized last year. Is that something do you all as a committee think about early in the process? Hey, let's emphasize this year. Is that something that just evolves as the year goes on? Take us through that process of when you decide, okay, this is something we need to emphasize. Not that you don't emphasize the other bulleted points, but this is one that's really important. How does that work?
Yeah, of course. You know, we go through every criteria first. You know, and those are set. You know, our RPIs. You know, top 25 wins, the quad. You know, the quad wins, strength of schedules. You know, everything that's set there. But again, when you get into that room, when those margins are really, really small, and you're trying to decide, you know, a ranking, what do you set? And we talk about that very in the bracketing and when we get to the session. You know, yeah, we talk about our criteria and we have those listed all year. But when we get in that bracketing session is, you know, like the top 10 wins, you know, last year were really important when we talked what set a team apart. And I think that's important that everybody's on the same page. But again, you've got 10 people and how they look at data. And how we administer the data, we try to be as equal as possible, but some people might have a different viewpoint. And that's why we have, you know, 10 people to vote on that. And the discussions are really, really good, you know, and when you get those last four in or whatever, those are when you take probably most of your time up, you know, because you want to make sure it's right. And there will always be questions, people wondering why, but that's just part of sports. You know, it's been like that for every sport, every bracket probably gets questioned. A lot of times. And I think this year, you know, we see a lot of parity in softball. And you know, I think our job this year is going to be very difficult, you know, especially maybe not the seeds or whatever, it's always difficult, but just getting those 32, because I think there's a lot more parity and that's great for the game. You know, it's like seeing the viewership numbers go up, you know, softball and, you know, women's basketball, everything. That is great for the game, but it's harder for the committee.
Yeah. I don't envy. Trust me, I compare, and it's always interesting. But that's it, fascinating. So really, when you emphasize, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, when you emphasize, you know, like last year was top 10 win, it's to perhaps be like a sort of a tiebreaker if there's the teams that are really close to each other. You all get in the room, and like, how do we figure out the difference between Team A and Team B? Someone picks out, okay, that really stands out as the difference maker. Is that how that works, basically?
Well, we're constantly discussing it. You know, you look at that total body work and you can start circling boxes. Who's got more top 25s and who's got a better strength schedule? Who's got maybe the worst loss or a quad four loss? You know, shouldn't have been there, or there might be some circumstances why they got that. You know, when it comes down and a lot of people are even, you've got to have some of that tiebreaker discussion, you know, and it could be different for each committee. On there, we'll discuss more about that. But really, we really concentrate on the set criteria to begin with to make those moves. But let's face it, you're going to get down to those one or two that are basically equal. You start circling boxes and you're like, gosh, they're equal. You know, they got 9 or 12 top 25 wins. They got, you know, and you try to go, okay, where do we look back at to compare? And, you know, the more data, the better, in our opinion, and so that we can talk about it and come to a conclusion with all 10 members.
You use the RPI with softball. Baseball uses an RPI. They just changed their RPI formula, though. It's a lot more, way more different than even softball. I'm not even going to get into the baseball one because it's very complicated and it gives you a headache sometimes of some of the, like, what they did. But I only bring that up because, for example, men's and women's basketball did away with the RPI. They're using the net ranking. I've been this year in all the sports, you can confirm if this is accurate, that the KPI is a tool that could be used this year. Is that accurate for softball this year?
Well, I think what we've decided with the KPI, it's not one of the criteria like RPI, but it's going to be used as a reference point.
Okay.
So what we've done, even in our regional calls, and you know, I'm not sharing anything that probably shouldn't be shared, but what we've done is just kind of use it as a reference point. Like if somebody's setting at a 16 RPI and they're setting at a 18 KPI, well, you know, you can, okay, but if there's a bigger difference that we see in KPI, what's the difference? What are we missing here? Just to kind of reference point it back. And what we've seen so far comparing, you know, the KPI, RPI, It's pretty close, you know, at this point. We got a lot more softball to play, but we're going to use it as a reference point and keep discussing adding more data to the room, because I don't think you can get enough. I don't think you get enough of those, you know, whether you put them in the criteria in time or not, you know, but it's definitely good to look at that stuff, you know, because it's important, because there could be some tweaks that we're not seeing. But I'm glad we're using it as a reference point this year, and we'll discuss it at our summer meetings, whether we want to continue that or add it to it. And I think there's some other probably charts out there that are coming along, you know, that people are using as well.
I 100% agree with you. I've been a proponent of more information than just narrow it down, because this is a hard process to begin with. So why not have as much more information as you can? Why not have more data points, you know, whether it be a, you know, KPI, there's a DSR now that's been built, more information to reference, not to, and I think that's a barely, I agree with you 100%. I really am glad to hear that, because I do think that could help everybody, you know, be a little easier job if you just have more information. I think it's just kind of common sense for me, but I'm glad to hear that. And you said maybe that could be discussed in the summer.
Yeah, summer meetings are when we, you know, when we apply some things, you know, when we want to go ahead and make them permanent. But that's when we talk about those. But, you know, I think it's been good so far. Yeah. I think it'll be nice when we get into the room, how much we reference back to it, just to make sure we're, okay, where's the big, you know, if someone's got a 10 or 12 or 13 difference, what was that difference?
Yeah.
You know, and I may need somebody smarter than me to help me, you know, get those numbers, too many numbers in the room. But I think that's real important. I'm glad you agree with that, because I think this committee for sure likes that and likes to get it so that we're trying to make the right decision.
Right. Because if there's, let's just say you use three or four data, you know, systems that pretty much are agreement with the ranking and maybe agree with what you saw from that team, then that makes you feel much more confident about making that selection. And then on the other hand, let's say they do disagree. Now you're going to maybe look closer at that team and say, why is there a disagreement? And, you know, what stands out? So I think in a way it just makes the easier process. So that's good to hear. So I'm fascinated to see how that plays out.
And I think Eric, it'll help coaches going forward too.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, strength of schedules or how do you schedule, that's always been kind of the crapshoot sometimes. But I think it'll help them understand, you know, the process a little better, and I think that's important.
Let's talk about conference standings, because I've been told in the past that that is not something that you look at and say, okay, well, this team finished first or this team finished second in the conference, so therefore they're ahead of the team that's, say, fourth. Because sometimes we've seen where teams are seeded higher than another team, even though they didn't finish higher than them in the standings. And the explanation I've been given is, you look at all of them in a teams in a pool. You don't look at it as conferences. You're just trying to pay. So just kind of clarify that, expand that for the audience, because that's a popular question that I get asked all the time. And once again, I got asked this year about that. So just kind of explain that for the audience.
I mean, you have a few places where you do compare teams when it comes, or teams within a conference when it comes down to maybe something like seeding or anything. But, you know, the head-to-head and the, you know, common opponent type thing. But really, once we get into the room, the conference standings are out. You know, we look at the total body work for each team, you know, again, and I think that's real important. And how they did against top 25, top 50s, the strength of schedules, their, you know, all of that goes into that. But, we, you know, we don't look at, per se, a conference standing with someone finished, you know, 12-6 and someone finished 10-8. You know, there could be a chance that why, you know, and so we always got to look at all that. But really, it's all about the criteria. It's all about empty slate when we get into the room and using all the data that we have.
And part of it, and this is why I enjoy doing these every year, because I didn't know about that until I started doing these interviews. Because I used to be, prior to this, like, why is this team seated in the conference? But as I've been explained and been told, as these conferences get bigger, you don't play the same schedule in the conference. Some teams just maybe have an easier schedule within the conference than others. So it's not apples, you know, it's not apples, you know, the same common opponents. It's apples and oranges in a lot of ways. And that's only going to even get continue as these leagues become even bigger and bigger with everything that's going on in college athletics today.
Yeah, that's why you look at the full season. And you're right. You know, everybody doesn't play everybody in some conferences. You know, where do they play them? And all of that, those circumstances. But, you know, you're right. It's going to be a little more difficult as these conferences get bigger if they don't play each other. You know, so that's why we throw that out and we look at the criteria that's set and we go with that.
One of the other ones is the 400-mile radius. That is obviously something that gets brought up a lot. Explain to the audience about why that is in place and kind of what you as a committee, because some people think that, well, this is your idea. It's not. It's what you have. It's what the NCAA tells you, okay, work within these parameters. So explain the challenges of putting a bracket together, but you also have to keep in mind that certain teams, this is not basketball where you seed everybody. You only seed 16, and then some teams are, quite frankly, going to be put in a regional based on geography.
Yeah, you're correct. I mean, I wish there was unlimited budgets, especially on my campus. I wish there was an unlimited budget that I could do this. But that's part of what we are given and how we administer this tournament now. Now, there could be some discussions later that change some of this, whether it's seeding more teams or expanding brackets, which we all know is out there. You know, but right now, that's what the requirements that were set for us that we have to follow. So, you know, the 400-mile radius, obviously we don't put two conference teams in the same region. You know, we rank the top 16, you know, teams, and they're the host of the regionals, and you put four teams in each of those 16 spots. You know, then you look at trying to make as least amount of flights as possible, but still trying to keep as balanced as we can, you know, which is a little more difficult maybe here than other sport, basketball maybe, but, you know, we try to do that, and it's probably not, you know, it probably gets the most question, and we understand that, but I think for the most part, we really look at it more than people think. We don't just come back and say, oh, it is. No, we look at making sure it's as equal as we can.
Is there a place number you're told as far as we got to limit it to X amount of flights, or it's got to be X amount of, is there a number that's put there, or is it just there's no number?
I've never heard the number per se. I mean, we've always looked back at, well, in 2021 we had X amount, in 22 we had, you know, we try to keep it as comparable as possible, but I've never heard a number from the NCAA staff, and, you know, obviously we want to keep them down as much as we can, but I think they understand that, you know, when you put those 16 teams up there, you know, that in itself could be great or it could be a problem regionally, depending on where they're all from and at, you know. So, you know, we have to understand that. And I think the flights have fluctuated plus or minus two or three every year. You know, I don't think there's a set number whether we can only have 25 flights and we got to cut it off and somebody, no. I think they're going to look at the 16 teams that we place, you know, for hosting seeds, and then we have to adjust off of that. And there could be more one year than the other.
Volleyball, women's volleyball and women's soccer, the last couple of seasons have gone to 32 seeds. Not necessarily 1 to 32. They have their own little different formulas, like 1 through 8 in each region and things like that. Is that something that's been discussed as far as perhaps softball going to 32 seeds in the back channels? Is that something that could possibly happen, or is that not in the radar?
It's absolutely been discussed, and it has been supported by our committee. You know, and I think once that happens, though, you know, it goes to a different, you know, goes to the rules committee and you know, championships committees, different than the tournament, you know, our committee, you know, and definitely the 50%, maybe bracketing 50% of the field is supported by our committee. And we hope that comes, you know, pretty quick. And I think the soccer and the volleyball test has been pretty good so far, and that's why the committee has supported it. I can't put a time frame if that's going to happen next year or
sure,
5 years,
sure.
But I definitely know that our 10 people on our committee have supported it, you know, unanimously.
There's positives of the 400 miles radius rules. It's a lot easier in cases for fans and families to travel. And you mentioned the budget, so let's understand that. But I think the one criticism, I think, or something that maybe frustrates some of the audience is, with the 400 radius, sometimes teams get placed in that same regional, multiple years. Is that something that is in the back of committee's mind? Like, oh, we set this team like the last 2 years they've played it. Let's not do that if we have that opportunity to maybe send him somewhere else. Maybe this team has three places they fit in the 400. Instead of sending him the same place, let's send him somewhere different. Obviously, there's going to be cases where you have no choice. That's the only place they can go. You know, but is that something that's discussed? Is that brought up as far as a team that's been repetitive? Because I know coaches, when they've told me, that's one the thing that frustrates them about that is they want the student-athlete to have a great experience, not the same experience they're used to maybe during the season or the year before. Is that something that's a factor discussed in the room?
Absolutely, and I think it happened last year, you know, where, you know, you've got two quality teams that have, you know, you talk about someone going next every year going to the same place, you know, whether they're 1-2 seeds or, you know, usually that's when it kind of happens. The 1-2 seeds that are at the, you know, top, you know, there that get, oh my gosh, we got to send them there again. We've talked about it a lot. And when it comes, when we come back and look at the brackets, you know, we're like, okay, they went there last year. Is there any other place we can send them? Because you're exactly right. You know, you don't want that every year because that's the experience factor. It's just something to, I think it would help us grow our game if we didn't have that, so that people don't think that that's going to happen every year. So, you know, we definitely look at it and discuss it a lot.
No, it's good to hear. I think some people would be happy to hear that because that was another point people brought up. When you look at a team, and we've seen this in other sports, injury sometimes happens. The roster changes for various reasons. So maybe they're not the same team today that they are February. You know, we saw this in football. Obviously, that was a hot topic with Florida State losing Jordan Travis and whether, you know, the impact of that. And that's obviously apples and oranges. It's a different field for a team. That being said, how much is that an impact when you look at a team? Hey, this team really, you know, either played really well early in the year, but have struggled. They're not the same team because of injuries or whatever happened to the roster changes. Or, you know, the opposite way. Maybe the team struggled early, but they're a different team now because maybe they got somebody back from an injury or whatever. How much is that, does a committee look at that when it comes to a team's profile?
Well, I think the total body of work is going to get you in. But how you finish is probably going to get you seated differently. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So like if someone finishes in their last 10 games 3-7 because of that injury, you know, that's probably going to drop them down, you know, in seed lines. But their total body of work, you know, if they have so many top 50s, you know, blah, 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 you know, all those criteria, is still going to get them in. But I think it's like anything. If you're hot late, it increases your seed if everything else matches up, you know, in the criteria, you know. But if you're not, and if you have an injury and you finish, like I said, 3-7 your last 10, it's probably going to drop your seed down some, you know, based on that. So you look at that. We don't necessarily say, oh, that injury is going to cost them to, you know, lose the next two games and they're going to be out right away. No, they earned it throughout the season in order to get into the tournament, you know. But just it's like anything. If you slow down late, your seed's going to drop. You see that in basketball and every sport all along. Your seed's going to drop if you go 3-7 in your last 10.
Or vice versa. Maybe your seed goes up if you finish drop, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier the people in the rack. They usually provide you that information. Hey, this team has had this injury. Is that how that you get that information? I've heard theory. There's been, and again, these are myths. I don't even know if it's accurate or not. I've heard in the past that maybe sometimes schools will try to reach out to people and say, "Hey, this is our injuries that we've had. This is our record." Is that how does that any of that happen? How did that information get relayed?
Sometimes in the rack calls, you know, another coach will talk about their conference and what their teams are going through because they talk with those coaches all the time. You know, we obviously, you know, when we talk about it in the rack or even in the committee room, if your team is discussed, you leave the room, you know, so you don't get to talk about that. Now, in the rack calls, we do allow the coach to go through this, the basics of their team, you know, but they have more information about their conference that they share. But also, you know, schools don't reach out specifically to us to give them information. It's their conference office that I will receive, that all of our committee will receive, you know, stats and updated notes from each team. And I think those really, really help. I mean, you know, obviously conference is one of many of their teams in the tournament, but, you know, we'll have about every conference send us, you know, their weekly, you know, softball highlights and notes, you know, which I definitely read, because there's, like you said, there's some things that I don't know. I don't know if there's an injury on X team, you know, that's playing, you know, another team, you know, and so I want to know that just for referencing that in the room. But I think that's good to have.
Something that somebody had multiple people actually told me that back in February when I was in Clearwater for the tournament, that if I had you on this year to ask you this and ask future committee chair, because I never thought about this until this year, because Mother Nature this year has been interesting, to say the least. And boy, was it interesting this year in Clearwater, washing out the last couple of years. I only used that one as an example because there's usually a lot of more important games, marquee games played there that were not played as a result. And a lot of times teams built their schedule. That's a big part of it. How much does the committee look at a fact, maybe a team lost 5-6 games due to Mother Nature and they intended on playing, you know, because that impacts your schedule rankings. It impacts all the data points. How much do you look at that as a committee member? Like, well, this team kind of is got a hand behind their back because maybe they lost 5-6 games beyond their control.
Yeah, you're definitely going to discuss it. You know, we're obviously going to use the criteria that are set in stone, but I, you know, it's kind of like the eye test and the other discussion points that you talk about, you know, you've got to throw that in there. You know, I think we've had more ties this year too.
Yeah.
People that had to get away because of travel requirements, or like you said, weather came in. There's been some ties, and how do we allocate those into the system. But, you know, definitely discussion points that we'll have based on every year. You know, it's an outside sport. You know, so there's going to be delays, there's going to be games canceled, there's going to be makeups, there's going to be things that, you know, you, like you said, that you counted on those games that may affect some of that strength of schedule one way or the other. So, yeah, we will discuss that with those circumstances like that.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen more and more of that this year with games against top 25, top 50 games. I mean, because that's part of how you make the resume. And some teams like, well, we there's nothing we could do. And that's, you know, the uncontrollables. Is always what fears I've got to sense, fears a lot of coaches, the uncontrollables. Am I scheduling correctly? What if a team that I scheduled that, for example, this is another question I've been asked. If I played a team that normally is very good and maybe didn't have the year, am I getting punished for that? Or if I played a team in February that was really playing well at the time and maybe was fully healthy, but they're different. Those, it's interesting, the concerns that the coaches and people have when it comes to this type of process. How would you react to some of that?
Well, you know, that's every sport. You know, I'm sitting here as an athletic director trying to schedule for my teams, you know, football. You think, well, we're going to play this team because they've always been in the top 25. And guess what? They go 3-8. And you're like, well, you know, so it's every sport. And it's you hate to say, you would like it to be easier to schedule, but some of it is a crapshoot, you know, because you're thinking you're going to schedule a team that has traditionally been pretty good and they fall off the table. But guess what? That criteria is off this year, you know, so it's difficult to schedule. And that's hard because everybody says, well, you need to schedule this way, this way, this way. And you do, and something falls through, you know, and it does hurt you sometimes, you know, because you didn't think that they would be as bad as they were or fall off like that. But scheduling is difficult, but we've got to go off the criteria that's set for this year and apply it as such.
You have to obviously have 16 hosts. You've got to pick the at-larges, and you got to seed them. They're all challenging, all of them. All three aspects of that is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But is there one of those three in particular that you have found either from last year or you're anticipating might be even more challenging this year, where you might have, hey, we're going to probably have to spend some extra time in the room. There might be some arguments. Is there one of those three particular that you think either may happen or just from your experience think is the more challenging one?
Well, I think all pieces, you know, without looking at everything right now, there's usually one that you think will be easier this year that doesn't end up being easier. But, you know, I think the challenging part about softball is what you just said, getting the 16 right. You know, and the 8 are important too. You know, we all know that. But 8, you know, 16, you know, getting the rest of the field correct. And again, with what I'm seeing that's been so different this year, the parity in this year is going to make that more difficult. So we're going to have to really do our homework and be prepared, because I think I think the 16 will be more difficult this year. I do. I think just getting the last few 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in, because I think there's going to be a lot of teams, those first four, eight out, that are going to be, I think we're going to have to compare more teams this year, you know, and it may take a little longer into the night, you know, because I think we're going to have to compare more teams, because I think there's probably enough teams to get in that could be in on any other given year, but the parity is so much better this year. And I think that's great for the sport. But again, like I said, it's going to be harder for the committee.
I've heard, in talking to committee members and committee chairs in the last couple of years in particular, Gatwood brought this up last year, in Sandy Atkins, their main concern in the future is, with these conferences getting bigger and bigger, the challenges of putting a bracket together, because you mentioned you try not to put two teams in the same conference. You cannot do that in the same region. Well, it gets getting harder when you have, for example, I think the SEC is going to like 15 teams next year, et cetera. Is that a concern moving forward within the committee as far as building this resume, where you're going to have one league that has 13, 14, 15 teams, whatever, versus a conference that maybe only has 7, 8 teams? Is that something that's a concern moving forward and making more challenging?
Absolutely, based on, you know, the parameters we have on how we do our bracket. You know, I think every sport's worried about that. Even, you know, the basketballs, you know, with the team expanding and getting them not in the same regions or whatever. But we definitely are, because, you know, you've got some, you know, the Power Four conferences, you know, that traditionally get, you know, a lot of teams in. You know, bracketing the way we do it, is it could be very difficult. And not having him in the same region, you're definitely right. So we have talked about that, and that's going to be a big summer discussion, you know, as well.
I know basketball, there was a lot of chatter about, will the tournament expand? There's been back and forth on that. You obviously have seen that up close, has been involved on the basketball side. Has there been any conversations about potentially softball expanding the tournament, or has that been pretty much not brought up, quiet?
No, there is discussions, because I think just the first is that seeding more of the field. The second is potential expansion of the bracket, you know, and I think the committee is interested in that. I think what we've done and seen so far as some of the models is really with the NCAA, and as far as finance committee, and seeing if it's feasible to do. And the other part of that is, If we happen to expand it, could we fit it in the time frame we have, you know, to right. get the tournaments done?
Right.
And, you know, you talk about expanding brackets. We're traditionally, you know, a double elimination sport, correct? You know, so, you know, what do we do about that? So there's a lot of discussion about it, and we just want some more information to truly make a decision. We've asked for a few models, you know, and how much the cost would be, you know, the factor of that. But also just some of the, like I said, the logistics of it and how that works.
I want to ask about you. What got you interested in getting into administrative in college athletics and then eventually getting into the committee here for softball? Could take me through that journey for you. What got you interested in college athletics, which, by the way, what a time to be in it. It's adventurous right now, but you're a part of it. What got you interested?
Oh, I think both my parents were public educators. I got 2 degrees in education. At first, it was coaching. You know, when I was an undergraduate, I was part of a basketball program, and that kind of got me into it there, and wanted to coach. And then I went and got a master's and got into the administrative side of thing. And I love the educational aspect of college. You know, great years. It's changed a lot, especially in the last four or five years. And then I love the aspect of, I think, especially at a school, a mid-major or a low major like where I'm at currently, you know, being able to serve, you know, being able to serve on committees is important, because I think the low major, the mid-major needs a voice, even though it might be a one bid type league situation for us in all the sports. But at least we have a voice in how things operate. And I think it's just great exposure for my school and my conference to have a position like this, you know. And I love college athletics. You know, some things we can probably sit here for another hour or two to talk about the way it's going, where it's going in some aspects, but I still think the mission is correct, and that, you know, get a kid's college degree to better themselves, you know, and I think that's real important. That's probably who I am.
Do you remember when you were asked to join the softball committee? What was that like? What was it that got you intrigued to join the softball committee?
One, I was on women's basketball for the previous 2 years, so the COVID year and then the next year. We talked about reappointing me for women's basketball, okay? But I had a son that was going to be a senior. He's a senior this year, but he was playing a lot of basketball, and I was missing a lot of his games being on the women's basketball committee. And I said, well, if there's a committee I could transition to, you know, to be on in the spring. So our OVC commissioner said, hey, softball is opened up. Would you want to transition over there? And I said, absolutely. So I got on the softball committee, and it's been wonderful. The NCAA staff and the committee is great. And that was because my son didn't play a spring sport. Well, this year, his senior year, he decided to play baseball.
Of course he did.
Missing all my baseball. His baseball games being on the softball committee, but it's still good work, and I enjoy it.
He decides to play the year where you're going to have, like, committee chair responsibilities.
I watched every basketball game, but now I'm missing some baseball games.
You know? Oh, man. Unbelievable. Couple more things and we'll let you go. Facilities. How much is that influence based on your selections? Thankfully, it's not. I don't feel like it's as big of a topic anymore. It used to be, hey, this facility, they can't host because they have certain facilities and things like that. It feels like almost, 90, I would say, 90, 95% teams now can host and fit right. the criteria. But I do want to ask, just for the record there, is that how much a factor of that process as far as selections for hosting and things?
You know, it could be, but, you know, the NCAA and Kelly Whitaker, specifically for softball and the NCAA staff, does a great job with, you know, getting the bids. You got to put those in time, you know, whether you can host or not, and have the criteria that you have or required to host, whether it's a hitting facility adjacent to the stadium, you know, four locker rooms. You got to have four locker rooms close to the stadium. So those criteria are set. And most of those schools, they know it, and they have a checklist that they go through. We don't, you know, we don't spend as much time on that as we used to when I was especially on a D2 committee back before, you know, because if you put in a bid, you got to have that checklist pretty much filled up, you know, until because you won't get it. You know, we've had some circumstances where some other event was going on that someone probably couldn't host before, not during my time here, but they've talked about it. But I think you're right. I don't think it's as big as because of how the process they have set up for this.
Yeah. The game has grown.
Yeah. What's that?
The game's grown. That's why.
Yeah, game's grown. Facilities have grown, especially most of the schools that you know host. Have that, it used to be some people didn't have lights, or not good enough quality lights for a TV broadcast, you know, so I think that's mostly gone bye-bye at our level.
When you joined the softball committee and as you got into it, did you have like, hey, you know, we did this in basketball, or I've got friends who did this. Do you pitch ideas that, hey, maybe this makes the process better? Or was it, you know, I'm always fascinated when you've been on committees of multiple sports. Do you try to like, well, this worked for this sport. Maybe that could help this process here. Or do you kind of keep them separate no matter what?
I think there's separate criteria, but I think the committee work is very similar. You know, I've enjoyed being on committees because of the process that NCAA has set up, especially in the selection room. You know, the computer system that we use, the voting system that we use is really good, you know, that you can take 10 people and vote and put, you know, who they vote for, and there could be some differences, and then that discussion. It's pretty high tech in what we do in the room. But, yeah, you know, being on committees, you look at all of them. You know, and I've enjoyed the different pieces of them all. You know, like I talked about, the coaches being on the softball committee was different for me. I've never been on a committee with coaches, but I've enjoyed it. And I can see how something similar, whether it's a liaison board or something, you know, to help. Obviously, the time frame for basketball is more than softball, you know. And so those are just different nuances. But, you know, they're really set up to really well to get the right teams in, and everybody that's on a committee that I've worked with, and the networking that you get to do, it's high level, and I've really enjoyed it.
What is something that's going to maybe keep you up at night for maybe as we get closer to this? Not necessarily about the process or the at-large teams or the resume, just as being the committee chairperson and your role in that. What is something, couple things that you're thinking, all right, I got to make sure as a committee chairperson, I do this. Nothing to do with as far as the teams itself, just your job and running that committee.
I think running the committee initially in the room is keeping us on track. You know, that short time frame, keep us on track, you know, moving to the next spot, making sure every discussion point is consistent, you know, that we're not bringing something in later that we didn't select somebody before. So that's number one. And then as the tournament gets started, you know, you just worry about, you know, weather delays and, you know, it's an outside sport, but getting teams there, having a good experience. You know, and then Oklahoma City, again, the weather delays and things that could happen. Hopefully they don't. We didn't have a lot last year, and it really ran pretty well. And just making sure that our student athletes and coaches have a great experience throughout the tournament. You know, you want it to, you don't want any bad spots to come about, you know, that we get called out on, you know, whether it's social media or everywhere else. You want to make sure it's ran as perfectly as you can. And there'll be some times you have to make decisions, but, you know, if you're consistent with that. But I'm excited for the room. There's a lot of softball to be played. I think we'll do our best to get it right and use the criteria that we have. You know, it's definitely hard work, and I enjoy it. But we have a great committee, and I think we'll get it right as close as we can.
Well, and the exciting thing about it is, you know, because I've had people tell me this, the beauty of the process is so much better now than it was, say, 10, 20 years ago, because 10, 20 years ago, you probably had to go and travel to see a team with your own eyes. You don't have to do that anymore. Pretty much you have the disposal about every team. If you wanted to watch a team on the bubble or a team that's hosting, just turn on a stream device, right? Like whether it be an ESPN Plus, whether it be whatever. You have all that in your disposal and can do that from your house, and you have more of that as on your disposal than maybe even like committees did 10, 20 years ago. So in a way, and look, as somebody told me, listen, at the end of the day, our job is to watch softball. It's not the worst job in the world.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, the NCAA does such a great job of allowing us. If we don't have, I mean, most people have ESPN Plus in our business, but, you know, if we don't have Flow Sports or right. any other conference, you know, network, they allow us to purchase that and watch the games. Again, the regional advisory committees do a great job. The conference offices sending us notes and materials. You know, there's a lot to go through. Again, adding KPIs, just a reference point, more data that we get. So I think you're right, Eric. I think it, you know, I don't know if I was on one 10 years ago, but, you know, I think 10 years ago or 20 years ago, you know, it's totally different. We have a lot more information and right at our disposal. We can do the eye test more and be prepared probably a lot more than what has happened before in the past.
My last point, it's really not even a question. What would you want to say to the audience that's out there, to coaches and players that maybe are going to listen to this? What's a message you want to send out to them about this, the 2024 Division I Softball Committee?
Well, they're just doing such a great job. Again, there's a lot of teams that, you know, are playing hard, and the parity is great, and we're going to do our best to select the best tournament possible, and I'm really excited for it. I know our committee is really excited for it, and a lot of work to be had yet, but we're going to get in the room and make it a great experience.
That's Kurt McGuffin, the Division I Softball Committee Chairperson. Of course, he's also the Vice Chancellor and Director of Athletics at UT Martin. Thank you so much for doing this. You answered all the questions. I know it's something that our audience always loves, this type of deal, because they want to know and get information. I think I always feel like it's my responsibility to get the word out on how this works so people understand it better. You know, maybe they won't 100% agree with every selection, but at least they understand the process and everything, whereas I don't think that existed 10 years ago. And I know you're a big part of that this year. Thank you so much for taking the time from your busy schedule and talking at length about this process, which is so fascinating. Good luck the rest of the way. Maybe we'll catch up down the road afterwards and see how it went. But in the meantime, good luck, and thanks for joining us here on In the Circle on D1 Softball.
Eric, thank you. Thanks for all you do for softball. Appreciate it.
And thanks again to Mr. McGuffin, the chairman, for spending time with us. And thanks to the great people at NCAA for, as always, setting up that interview with Eric. And I know fans always talk about, we don't hear enough about the people making the decisions, but we at Inner Circle, we take great pride in getting you those conversations with the people who made those decisions. So we thank Chairman McGuffin for taking our time of his schedule, and I'm sure he and the committee will have a lot of work ahead of them between now and Selection Sunday night when they announce and reveal the field of 64. Some interesting results took place this week that will have an impact on those decisions being made in the room, including a stunner in Gainesville and a score that I did not believe that I saw. All that and more coming up on this edition of Inner Circle on D1 Softball. And speaking of teams that are making some interesting decisions in the room, I don't know if y'all are aware of this or not, but the University of Virginia is having a phenomenal season and looking to make the tournament for the first time since 2010. On the latest episode of the D1 Softball Podcast, Jenna Becerra and Amanda Lorenz talk to Virginia head coach Joanna Harden as the Cavs have a big-time series win versus Duke and find themselves on the precipice of making the NCAA tournament for the first time in over a decade. That and much more in the latest episode of the D1 Softball Podcast, presented by S2 Cognition, available on d1softball.com and is wherever you get your podcast. And while you're there on d1softball.com, go ahead and get yourself an annual subscription to D1 Softball. And because you are such loyal listeners of our podcast, we want to thank you by giving you a little sun when you subscribe annually to D1 Softball. How does 25% off sound to you? That means you get access to Eric Lopez's Bracketology. You get access to the Transfer Tracker. You get access to the Head Coaching and Assistant Coaching Carousel. And the phenomenal articles being written by our tremendous writers, Graham Hayes, Rana Pocky, in our Student Writers Series, which has been an absolute hit all season long. D1Softball.com. Get an annual subscription. Use the promo code CIRCLE25. And you get 25% off your annual subscription to D1 Softball. Again, use the promo code CIRCLE25 to get 25% off your annual subscription to D1 Softball. While we wait for Mr. Lopez to grace us with his presence and talk about his conversation with the chairman, Mr. McGuffin, let's recap some of what happened on Wednesday. And full disclosure, ladies and gentlemen, I was out in the land, Florida, all day on Wednesday broadcasting the ASUN Beach Volleyball Championship opening round. So I was not following what was going on in softball, but I was aware that Florida State was making a trip to Gainesville to take on Florida in the top 20 showdown. What I didn't expect to see when I walked back in to record the show was see right below 5 for the fifth inning, 12 runs for Florida State. Florida State had a fifth inning for the ages, and they dominated Florida, beating the Gators 12-3. By the way, Florida State was held to only one hit through the first four innings. And it wasn't that big home run that eventually broke the game open, although Torres' 3-run home run, for all intents and purposes, ended the game. It was Wade Caster single, Katie Dack single, Ross reaching on an air, wild pitch, Kaylee Harding single, then the Torres home run, and then next thing you know, all you know what broke loose. Flaherty singles, Kerr reaches on the fielder's choice, Flaherty advances on the fielding air, walk, fielder's choice, single, Beachum home run, and next thing you know, it's 12-2, and I'm sure everybody in Gainesville, with the exception of the Garnet and Gold that made the trip, were stunned at what they were seeing. So Florida State, after everyone was talking about, why y'all waking Florida State? Florida State isn't a top 25 team. Once again, Lonnie Alameda and her coaching staff needed time to figure out what they had and what they didn't have. And lo and behold, Florida State picks up probably one of the best wins in the non-conference since early February. And now for Florida State, number 16 in the latest D1 softball poll, knocking on the door of another ACC regular season championship. And yes, we've talked about their schedule. They got North Carolina, who lost on Wednesday versus East Carolina. They got another game against Florida, this time in Tallahassee. And they're at Syracuse to wrap up the regular season before the ACC tournament in Durham. Florida State 15th in the RPI as of this recording. Strength of schedule number 27. And the Florida win, again, the best win for Florida State since they shut out Stanford that opening day of the Clearwater Invitational. And probably their second most impressive win of the season. The game against Florida Gulf Coast and Fort Myers, notwithstanding, Florida Gulf Coast trying to get themselves a top two seed in the A Sun. Now, if you're Florida State, you get that win with Florida. If you win that second game next Wednesday, that's two wins over the Gators. And presuming you don't stub your toe against North Carolina or Syracuse or get bounced out early in the ACC tournament, I think the Seminoles are in prime position to be a host. And depending on all the chaos that's going on in front of them, do they sneak their way through the back door to a top eight seed? Who knows? Meanwhile, Florida, with that stunning loss, you look at the Gators, they're kind of scuffling since the month turned to April. They lose, they take two out of three versus LSU. They lose a midweek versus USF at home. First time they lost to the Bulls since 2005, and almost two decades. Lose two out of three at Mizzou. They take two out of three at home versus South Carolina, the Florida State loss. And they end the season at Georgia, at Florida State, host Texas A&M. The Gators have to be careful because they may be playing their way potentially out of a hosting possibility if they don't pick up a couple more wins before the SEC tournament in Auburn.
He'll bring it back.
And look who's joining us, ladies and gentlemen, after a very busy week, like myself, Eric Lopez. And Eric, I know I kind of mentioned about the Florida State-Florida game, but the important part is that we had the committee chairman, Mr. McGuffin, Vice Chancellor and Director of Athletics of UT Martin, the guests. And we always, and I kind of highlighted this before the interview and after the interview, and I know you want to echo this as well. We take a lot of pride in this podcast to getting you the interviews with the people who are involved in making the news and making the things happen. And for the fourth straight year, we had the honor and the privilege of having a Division I softball committee chairperson on our podcast. So thank you again to Mr. McGuffin for being on our podcast. And I'm sure you took a lot of pride in getting a chance to talk to this year's chairman.
Yeah, Kirk McGuffin was great. He answered all the questions, was up front. I've enjoyed this. This is actually one of our favorite things that we do at In the Circle. As you mentioned, it's the fourth year in a row we've had the Division I softball committee chairperson to kind of explain the process and everything and answer a lot of questions, quite frankly, that people ask a lot, ask us during the season and things like that. Yep. And so I'm really proud of the fact that we have that dialogue, which I think has been very positive and helpful. And like I said, it's not an easy job. Results constantly, you've highlighted some of them already this week, but just the whole year, it's been a fascinating season in the sport. But I do appreciate that very much. Appreciate Matt Holmes, who's in media relations in the NCAA, who helps sets us up with that every year. He's been fantastic with that. And, like I said, it's I take that one. Vic, you know me. I get very stressed when I get to that episode. It's a very important episode.
Yes.
I like to get it right. And
yes.
I do generally appreciate, and I think that's been a positive, I think, for everybody involved. So, and I, you know, and I, every year I've learned something about it, and I think that's always a good thing. And I hope I've been, you know, fair in that regard in the interviews, and it's going to be interesting here the next few weeks. So, yeah, thanks again to Kirk McGuffin, Vice Chancellor there at UT Martin, and taking the time from a busy schedule. And
yes,
like I said, the next few weeks are going to be really busy for them.
It certainly will be. And of course, the results I counted about Florida State beating Florida, Louisiana beating LSU on Tuesday, splitting that series with the Tigers. It's going to be a wild last month of the regular season. That's why you need to follow us here at D1 Softball. Eric with his latest bracketology out. We'll get back into the bracketology conversation on next week's episode.
Yeah, thank you for hosting the show. I just, as we recorded this, your recording, I got done with calling softball. They played a doubleheader against Bethune. Ava Justman threw a no-hitter in the second game. So there was a lot of fun stuff there. So thank you for taking the baton. That's how we tend to do. We've got our busy schedules, but I only bring that up, Victor, because of course on our next episode you'll get to hear In the Circle from the Plex as well. We'll be having coverage of Oklahoma and UCF. We got some guests, surprising, we're not going to say who, that we're working on from the complex there at UCF for Oklahoma UCF.
Yes,
senior weekend at UCF, the last ever road series for Oklahoma, mm-hmm, as a member of the Big 12, Victor. A historic weekend on many levels.
Yes,
for both Oklahoma and UCF in a major Big 12 series. And we will be having the content. We'll do the show from the complex on our next episode. We have some guests lined up. We're not going to spoil it right now. That's why you got to follow our social media platforms. Right, Victor?
That's right. In the Circle SB on Facebook and Twitter/X. So, Eric, I don't know if you heard the I know you didn't hear this earlier, but I do want to announce it once again for you so you can hear it from the source itself. Another top 20 month on Good Pods.
Awesome.
Number 20 in the top 100 sports monthly chart. Number 26 on the top 100 sports weekly chart as of this recording. Folks, the movement continues to grow.
Yeah, no, that means a lot. Everybody that's tuned in, people that have been listening for years, people that have listened, just joined in recently, thank you for that. Certainly the move to D1 Softball has been incredible. Our great staff and all the marketing people that behind, yes, the scenes on the social media, it's been really awesome here the first couple months on the show. It's going to continue to grow. We got some announcement surprises, yes, ahead, mm-hmm, to get to May. But, yeah, that's extraordinary. That's been probably our two record-breaking months in,
oh,
the,
yes,
history of the show. And that's, to me, I mean, some of the notable podcasts that were in that conversation is kind of insane.
Yeah.
Right there with the Bill Simmons podcast.
Bill Simmons, New Heights, Mina Kimes.
The Kelsey brothers, right?
That's, yeah, the New Heights. Just some of the podcasts that we are ahead of, I want to give an example. Countdown with Keith Olbermann, The Low Post, The Bill Simmons Podcast, just to name a few.
That's just to name a few
of the podcasts that we are surpassed as of this month. So we appreciate it. We're thankful for your support. We do not take it lightly at all.
No, I really hope not. I hope people don't realize. And what's why we do some lot of different variety on this show. Like I said, we have the committee chairperson. We're the only show that has had the committee chairperson 4 years in a row running in this time of year to get you ready,
yes,
for Selection Sunday. We have coaches, we have players, we have broadcasters, we have media personalities. We've got a little bit of everything.
Oh, Eric, did you say broadcasters?
Yes.
So just stay tuned for some more exclusive stuff that you can only find on the Inner Circle YouTube channel. That's all I will say about that.
By the way, it's big time season now. And also, let's make a note, promote Victor, D2. Regional rankings. I know you're going to be your D2 season, postseason right around the corner.
Follow up. Go to D2 Tuesday on social media. The latest episode of D2 Tuesday is out. I may have a video about the regional rankings that were released. So follow D2. That's the letter D and the number 2 Tuesday.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to listen now when I get done here with that podcast there. It's going to be big. That's big now. We got rankings finally, Victor. Victor, rankings.
I know, actual rankings. But, again, we're talking D2 on D1 Softball. It's trying to
– But Promoting, just promoting the
yeah,
show.
Promoting our side projects.
Thank you, by the way, as well. My phone, I have a lot of messages. thank you. I have a lot of people congratulating me on the 600th UCF broadcast.
Hey!
Thank you. It's been overwhelming. You know what the common question I got, though? When are the two of us going to be on the same set to do the show? You realize Kornheiser was on with Wilbon.
I was gonna bring that up because I saw that on Tuesday, and I'm like, so that means Kornheiser, Wilbon 2, you and I 1. We kind of need to get that fixed and get that fixed.
Well, Kornheiser's got a nickname now, courtesy of P.K. Subban, the hockey player. He's called Corny or something like that now. He's got a nickname.
Can we just end the show before you come over?
Well,
with
you're
any
the
corny...
host of this show, so you get to.
I'm gonna end the show before Eric comes up with any corny pun intended.
Thank
nicknames.
You. Very well played. Well played. Thank you again to Kurt McGuffin, the obviously the director of Division 1 NCAA. Yeah, Division 1 Council Chairperson.
Yes,
NCAA person, and of course, as you mentioned,
Vice Chancellor and director of Athletics,
yeah.
T. Martin.
Always,
thanks to Mr. McGuffin. Thanks to Eric Lopez for filling in on the back end. Thanks to you for listening to this episode of In the Circle. My name is Victor Anderson. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of In the Circle on D1 Softball. Top podcasters out. Good night, Canada.